This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Saturdays are always wonderful. They're not like the old Saturdays, but they're okay.
It's the newfangled Saturday.
That's right. It's a new day. It's a new year.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we're not far away. I hate to say this, but Labor Day is only, what, a few weeks away. And you know what that means? That means it's time for fall, and then the holidays will be here before no time.
It's just an amazing year, isn't it?
It really is. It's going by so fast.
It has went so fast, and even the quarantine has went fast.
Yeah, now that's true. The quarantine, you know, who would have thought, you know, when things started back in the spring that, you know, here we are, you know, staring down fall, and we'd still be going through that.
I was hoping it was going to be through a little earlier, but I still think by November this thing is going to be over. It's got to be. If everybody just keeps their mask on, maybe it'll go away.
Really? You predict November?
Well, I mean, it's been here a long time. It needs to leave town.
I hope you're right about that.
I do, too. I mean, if everybody is wearing masks, they say it would go away. In 6 weeks, it'd be gone if everybody wore a mask.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a lot of people gathered out in Sturgis for the big bike fest, and I don't think just about nobody was wearing masks, and they were talking about how they were great to get out there, and there's no restrictions, and they're free, and then they're going to go home, and if they get anything, they're going to spread it all over the country, and I would look for a big spike after that's done.
I'm afraid it will, too, and I don't know why people think everybody wear them but me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just don't understand. And I saw the little old guy at the grocery store on television yesterday. They were berating him because he didn't have his mask on. He's supposed to. And he goes ballistic, and his son had to pick him up and carry him out of there.
Are you serious? Oh, I didn't see that.
His son picked him up and carried him out.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Huh.
So there is some people that you have to be careful about saying anything about them not having a mask on because they're going to go ballistics.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, everybody should be careful about that, except, you know, it's a shame we can't ask them, where is your mask?
Yeah, you can't do that.
No, we can't even do that because they might hurt us.
Yeah.
Might throw us down to the floor right there.
Exactly. And now what, I think earlier this week, they decided to stop football, so there's no football.
There's no big Christmas shows.
No big Christmas shows.
Prestonwood Baptist Church, you know, they've had this huge extravaganza for 15 years.
Wow.
And that will be no more. And that will not be here this year.
First time in 15 years, no Christmas show.
No Christmas show. Hmm. And it was so big, we had all the animals. You know, we had every zebra. We had donkeys. We had, we didn't have an elephant, did we? But we had the camels. We had every kind of animal. And that's all gone. And then the flying angels was fantastic.
Mm.
So it would be no more flying angels.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's just too many people in, you know, in one spot.
Yeah. Yeah. It could have been gone. At least over in Europe, it looks like their cases are you know, really, really under control, and they've gone down significantly. But ours keep going up in many cases. And now we're looking at, you know, like you say, holiday things that are going to have to change. So that's too bad.
But do you believe that Putin really has a vaccine?
I have no idea. You know, I heard that, and I'm like, is that real? Or
You don't know with the Russians, but he says he's got it, and he's already giving it to his own daughter.
Yeah, she's been taking it, what did he say? A couple weeks, maybe, or a couple days? I forget what it was.
Yeah, I didn't even look to see how much she took. He just said she was the first one vaccinated.
Yeah. Then you have to wonder if it's not a vaccine, if it's poison.
Woo! I would hate to never be the first person.
Boy, I've introduced
her. There's something bad in it. Don't be the first one.
Yeah, you did not need
it. They've done 100 or so, and then say do it.
Yeah. We're introducing our own conspiracy theories now.
That's right, especially when you're talking about the Russians. It could be.
Yeah,
we kind of got to watch them.
We shouldn't say that out loud.
I know. Russians, we really were joking.
Oh, my goodness. You got to keep it going. Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. So, and we're right next to Ivy Cottage.
Oh, your favorite. You hadn't been there in a long time. You haven't been to your favorite store.
No, I haven't. I haven't been anywhere, you know. I just, I'm sheltering in place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you, even though you wear a mask regularly, because I know when we talk off the show, you talk about how you always wear your mask and how you go places where other people are wearing masks, and you're doing well. Everybody's healthy in your family, right?
That's right. We have all stayed away from other people. If we have to go out, we have our mask on at all times.
Good. That's good. I'm glad everybody's healthy. I'm glad everybody's being safe. So what about meetings? I mean, how are you conducting business now if you're not, getting around people?
I talk to people on the phone. As I said, we're doing some Zoom meetings. There's other new deals out other than Zoom even. Virtual meetings, and I'm doing that, and I've done for the first time, I've set up two accounts, and I never even met the people, never even met them.
Really?
We've never done that in our life.
Well, these are definitely new times.
These are new times. The people came to the office and said, we'd like to set up an appointment, and Claudia said, you need to set up a new account? They said, yes. She said, I can do that right here. So Claudia set up the new account. She called me during the deal and said, ask me some questions, did that, and that's what all there was to it.
Wow. So in no time, whiz bang, all of a sudden they're all set up and ready to go.
They're all set up. So we've done two of those. This week we also had two maturities this week. It was pancreatic cancer. We had two policies, and that was good. Those came due. The Burke policy should be in everybody's account in another week. Burke is running a little bit behind. People are calling about it. But what happened was the death certificate was not acceptable to the life insurance company. They had to send it back and have the funeral home redo it.
Why?
And so this took a little bit of time. Well, the man was cremated. It's the first time we've had anybody cremated. Everybody just used that as a regular funeral and regular burial. He didn't, and so they changed it. Why the funeral home changed the death certificate, I don't know, but it was not acceptable. And so they sent it back and said, we want to be sure this is the guy, Burke. So they've got it back to the carrier. It was at the carrier the first of the week. And it usually takes about 12 days to get paid.
All right. So it's underway. It's getting resolved.
Yes, it is. It's getting resolved. Two or three people called, and we told them, it'll be here soon. And one guy's getting a little anxious. He said, I think there's something fishy going on. I said, I don't know what it is. How do you get fishy from... between the life insurance company and the funeral home. I mean, there's nothing fishy going on between those two. It has to be right, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
The insurance company will pay. As soon as everything's right, they don't mind paying. It was just it did delay it, and now it should be paid, I think, next week.
Okay. So just a little paperwork, no big deal. Everything's still on track.
Everything's fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, what about other policies? What's happening with because I know, you know, we see all these other things. There's almost every area of our lives has been affected in some way or another. You know, we look at job counts, we look at you know, the economy, we look at, you know, all these different things. What about the life insurance business as far as policies, investing? Has that changed at all in any way?
I think the getting people to sign their contracts with us is down. We're going to have to figure out a way to get these people some confidence, because that part has slowed down. We're getting policies to look at every day. We're still right there. But getting them to sign their contracts, well, we're behind on that right now, three or four policies, good policies that we've got out. They've agreed to them. We just haven't been able to get them to sign. So I think they're afraid to go to the insurance broker to sign their papers. I think that's what the problem is.
Oh, so it's the seller.
You know, when
you've
got cancer, you know, and you have to go out, a lot of them don't want to.
Okay, so the people who are selling their policy, they're the ones that are causing the delay sometimes.
Right. Now, we still have the man here in Texas that we're working direct with. We think we're going to buy his policy. I think this is going to be a great deal. The man is very sick. He's doing chemo right now. He came to the office again this week to bring us more documents. And this man is so thin. I mean, it's really a bad situation. But I think we're going to be able to help him. I haven't read the last medical, but I intend to read it this next week and see where we're at on his problem.
So explain that again. I'm not sure I understood. Are you saying that
most of the policies we buy out of state. We buy through a licensed provider. This one we don't have to, because we are a licensed provider in Texas. So this guy from Texas has come direct to us. Didn't have to go through a broker.
I got you. Okay. All right. So we don't talk about that very often.
No. And he is very ill, and we're trying to buy his policy.
How is that going with you, I guess, being the broker? You're essentially cutting out the middleman. So, like, say,
that's right.
Person, say, you know, Joe wants to sell his policy. He doesn't necessarily now have to go to his broker. He can come directly to you. You cut out the middleman.
Right.
What does that do? How does that benefit investors? Fees, time,
well,
anything
like that? We make more. Let's face it, you know. We don't know how much yet, because we don't know how much we can buy it for. We think we know, but we have to see how long term he has, how much longer he has that they think. I think it's short term. I think it's very short term, but we won't know till we get those final reports from the doctors.
I see. Okay. Do you buy a lot? Do you do a lot of that yourself, direct, or are still most of them coming
this
in from?
This will be our first one direct.
Wow. Cool.
Yes.
Well, no wonder we hadn't talked about it much.
I wish all of them were direct right here in Texas.
Yeah.
Because it cuts out the middleman, and our clients would make more money.
Yeah. That profit margin is bigger because it's one less expense to pay.
And we don't have two or three brokers that represent the client. That's telling them what to do, you know. Oh, that isn't good enough, or this isn't good enough, or, you know, let's do this.
So when you can buy it direct, it's less back and forth.
And it eliminates that broker and having to put up with him, because on all of our deals, we have to put up with brokers every day.
Put up with them.
Yeah, well, and sometimes they make recommendations that are not great for their clients, you know? Mm.
Like they should hold out for more, or?
Oh, yeah, they're saying, oh, no, that's not good enough. You need more money. And if we can't pay that much, the person ends up not selling their policy. Good grief.
So I'm going to guess they do that because the more they sell it for, the more that broker gets.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah, so they don't have their client.
We've had people call us right at the last minute when we bid a policy and say, can you come up another $5,000? Can you come up another $10,000? And it's the broker pushing it.
Because they want to make that just seems like they, you know, when you don't have your client's best interest in mind, it seems like nobody wins. Like you say, you know, they try to get more, they push it, they get greedy, and then they end up not selling at all, and nobody gets anything.
That's exactly right.
Oh.
But they're always thinking they're right.
I think it's in the Brooker Code. You have to always think you're right.
I think so. Oh, my gosh. And then we've had a lot of them that are very nice and easy to work with, and those are the ones I prefer.
Yeah.
And the others, you know, when they go back and tell the clients, says, I'd rather not be involved. I'd rather just say, okay, over and out. Let's go to the next person.
Next.
Yep, next.
So when people invest in a life insurance policy, it's a chance to grow their wealth. And I know we talk about how, you know, these policies come due. And I know, you know, we talk about how you get them. But as far as the grand scheme of things, people shouldn't go into something like this and say, hey, I'm going to invest in a life insurance policy because I'm going to get ready for retirement. So I'm sure somewhere along the way, somebody's got to think, man, if you got a, you know, a $500,000 policy, I can just, you know, buy that, and then that's my retirement right there, and I'm good to go. But that's not at all how this works.
No. We build it gradually and slowly over a period of years, 7, 8, 10 years, whatever. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme. You're not going to get rich overnight. You have to invest and reinvest and take your interest. And you know something that someone said to me this week? Said, you know, I was living on my dividends, and there is no dividends now.
Really?
Had you thought about that?
I had not thought
about it. Companies are not going to pay any dividends on their stocks.
Huh.
So if you were going to take interest off of those, you're not going to get it this year.
Well, that's an eye-opener right there.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it. And someone came to me and said, I was planning on having my dividends this year, and said, these companies have quit paying dividends. The companies they're invested in said, no, we're not paying a dividend this year. So, you know, all kinds of things can happen.
So are people adjusting to the market, or is there even a market to adjust to? Because I know a lot of people were in a situation where a lot of things have to happen differently. Do you think that this is something that most people are just easing into well? And why do they make the shift? Are you finding a lot of people in Wall Street or in the stock market and saying, hey, I need something else, but I'm not really sure? So how do people come into it? Where are they at mentally, like their outlook?
Well, even though the market is up right now, they know it may not last. So they also say, you know, I'm getting closer to retirement. I want to do something different. I want it to be more conservative. And they don't want the up and down, which even after they retire, the market can still go down and really put it to them. You know, all that gains they had, if it goes away, then they have to start over. And, you know, I don't want anyone to start over at 70 or 75. It's ridiculous. So, you know, you have to watch what you've got.
I talked to somebody earlier this week. This is a true story, by the way. I talked to somebody, and they got hit pretty hard in 2008. They've slowly started to recover, slowly, but they were finally getting to a place where they weren't quite to where they were before 2008, but they were doing okay, relatively speaking. And then something has happened in this last go around. Now they're looking at having to not only go back to work, and they're in their upper 70s, 78. They're looking to probably have to try to go back to work, which is a difficult place to be.
That's very difficult.
Looking at selling their house, looking at, a complete overhaul, because they've just been absolutely, the bottom has fallen out. And so I thought, man, that is a really bad spot to be in. You find a lot of people in situations like that, or are they being more proactive in preventing that?
Well, I think what happened in your people's case, and I don't even know who you're speaking of, but it depends what that broker had them in. If he had them in all these risky stocks or mutual funds, that's what happened to them. They got creamed, and they just about to recover, and they probably left it with the same guy. It's going to happen to them again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you've got to say enough is enough. And most of the people I know have gotten all their money back from 2008, except one couple that I know of.
Oh, really?
And they had to go back to work, and they couldn't even reinvest. There wasn't enough to reinvest.
Yeah, there's just nothing anymore.
The guy sold him some things he shouldn't have sold him.
Do you find...
You're at their mercy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's nothing you can do at that point. Do you find that a lot of people have already... I don't want to say suffer devastating losses because I don't want to go that drastic, but do you find a lot of people are, going through a second round here, post 2008, going through it, 12 years later, and they're saying, before we lose everything, let's make the shift? Or are people being more, optimistic and saying, let's go ahead and do something, or have they already lost everything? Where do most people fall?
Well, most people say, a month ago when everything went down, it really scared them. They lost about 100,000, maybe 150. They've climbed back up again. So a lot of them are saying, that now would be a good time to make a change.
Okay, so they're making the change while they're on the upside.
Yeah, on the upside is a good thing. If it's at the top, let's make the change now. Let's be conservative. Let's know how much we're going to make all the time. Instead of maybe we'll make this, maybe we'll make that, maybe we'll lose. And you don't want to do that just before retirement. It's a bad thing when you're fixing to retire and your portfolio is down 30%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be. You can invest and know in a life insurance policy how much you're going to make. You know what you invested, you'll get it back, and you'll get your interest back. And that's not always true in the market. You think you will, but you don't always know. It's a gamble, a big gamble, and this is not as big a gamble as that.
What are the gambles when people invest in a life insurance policy? Let's just address the bull in the room. What's the biggest risk that people are taking with a life settlement?
Okay, the biggest risk is it can go over. It may go over 2-3 years, but you'll always get your principal back. You'll always get your interest back. And if it's an IRA, you weren't going to take it out anyway, so you're safe. Your money is safe. It's in a life insurance policy. I don't know how it could be any safer than that. And the returns are very good. They make 1% a month. If it's a 24-month policy, you're going to make 24%. If it's 6 months, you'll make 6%.
Mm-hmm.
And so you always know it's 1% a month that you get your principal, you get your interest back. And these are all A and AA rated carriers. We don't do anything with B rated life insurance companies or anybody that's not, the very best.
Yeah. I want to get into those because we talk about when it does go over that people may have to pay those premiums. I want to get into just a little bit because I know that people sometimes hear, oh, man, I got to pay premiums. And they may start thinking, obviously worst case scenario. But 9 times out of 10, it seems like people are probably running some rough numbers and they don't really know exactly what kind of input it would have on their actual investment and their profit margin. So when they do go over, what kinds of premiums are we talking about? How much does it affect profit?
It can be $1,000. It can be $2,000. Or it can be $50. We've got some that are very, very cheap. And then we've got some of those older ones that are a lot higher. But as those come due and we wipe those off the face of the map, then there won't be any that's high.
Yeah. All right. So what's the second biggest risk?
Second biggest risk is this is not liquid until it matures.
Okay.
When you put your money in, your money has been put into the life insurance. The guy that owned that policy, we've bought it from him. We've taken their place, and now we're the owners of a life insurance policy. And when that matures, then you get paid. But you don't get paid till it matures. And I think everybody realizes that. That's probably the smallest risk of all, because going in that your money is in that insurance policy.
What if an insurance company goes under? What if that happens?
If that ever happened, we have the Texas Guarantee Fund in Texas that guarantees your money up to a certain amount. But we've never had anybody use it. We've never had a life company go broke in the state of Texas. And now nationally, we haven't had one in years because the premium income is so great, everybody wants to buy them. And, several years ago, I don't even remember what year it was, maybe 14, we had one that was in trouble. They bought it, you know, in no time. It was bought, I think, on the second month.
Ooh, wow, that's fast.
Yes, it is.
So put it in perspective real quick. Just say worst case scenario. Say the say we have a full-blown depression like 1929.
Wow.
Yeah, let's go for the Mac Daddy.
Run you want to go for 29 when people were jumping out of windows.
Yes, yes. So what if that was to happen on Monday? First thing in the morning, Monday, we go into a full-blown depression. What would happen to people that are invested in a life insurance policy?
Nothing would happen. As you know, in 1929, the life insurance companies are the ones that bailed everybody out. They're the only ones that had any money left. The life insurance company bailed everybody out. They bailed banks out. They bailed other companies out. And again, if we ever had a depression that bad, the life insurance companies are steady, and they would be the first ones in line to help people.
They have the reserves on hand.
They have those reserves that are so great. And you just can't beat having reserves on every policy. It's different than a bank. They have a lot more up than a bank does. Mm. So it makes it probably the safest place in America is a life insurance company.
So that's the worst case scenario, and it doesn't sound like that's bad at all because it's completely unaffected by anything.
That's right. And a person, when they come to us, they should put money in several policies. They should be diversified and keep policies going all the time. That's how you keep your interest growing.
So how does it work? When somebody comes to you for the first time, and I know you've had several people come to for the first time. You know, you signed up a couple people this week without even meeting them or anything like that in person. So when somebody comes to you, they've never done a life settlement before. They've never done this type of investment. What kind of questions do they have? What are their thoughts going in about how it works?
That's the first thing they say. Tell me exactly how it works. So I tell them, you know, that we bid on the policies, that when we get a policy, we send them an email and say, do you want to go in this policy? Do you want to put 60 in or 80,000, whatever it is? And we tell them what they're going to make, that it's 1% a month. It's a 24-month policy. You're going to make 24%. You get paid when the policy matures, and the bank is the one that handles it. The money goes to Nevada Trust. Never goes to us. You cannot make a check to us to open an account. So they get their account open. They've got a Roth with us. They've got an IRA, and they may have a joint account with their wife. What I've discovered that people are switching their regular IRA to a Roth. If they've already got a Roth, when the policy's mature, we're having the money go to their Roth because there's no taxes on Roth.
Mm.
So this is a smart move to have that IRA switch that over to your Roth where there's not any taxes ever.
What's the difference between IRA and Roth?
A Roth, if you keep it for 5 years, then you never have to pay taxes on a Roth. On a regular IRA, when you take it out, you have to start paying taxes on it. But a Roth is not that way. There'll be no taxes on it.
So you're taking proper steps to avoid any unnecessary taxes and fees and things like that.
That's exactly right, which is a great idea.
Essentially maximizing people's investment.
That's right. And then we have people that have inherited IRAs. We have quite a few of those. The people have died. An uncle has inherited, a nephew, a niece, and then they say, okay, how do I do this? Well, we switch it over to inherited status.
Hmm. All right.
And then they have to take some out every year on an inherited IRA.
As the expert, and I know everybody's situation is unique, but as the expert, what do you recommend people, if you could lay out the ideal scenario, you should start with this much to invest, you should be in this many policies and plan to do it for this long. What would you, as the expert, recommend a general layout for people to strive for?
Well, if they've got it and it's not an IRA, they can get it out. If it's in a 401k and they can roll it over, or if they've got it in their checking account, $250,000, $300,000 would be a good amount to start with because you can have several policies. If you're just testing the water, bring over $100,000 because that's the minimum. But if you've got enough, if you've got $250,000, $300,000, $500,000, let's start with that and put a lot of policies out and get something done.
I've never asked it like this, and I don't know if the answer gives a different perspective on it. But let's just split the difference. Say somebody comes down with $200,000. What does that get them? What do they?
Well, you could have either three or four policies out of that.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, that's much more. That's a little bit more diversified than what I thought. I thought maybe one or two.
Well, and people that have quite a bit of money with us, they like to put in $80,000 to $90,000 in everything. But if it's a new person coming in, they may not want to do but $50,000 per policy.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do that.
I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I would assume that a lot of people, from what I understand, probably start out maybe testing the waters, see how much profit they can make, how much they can grow their wealth, and then they increase and then kind of get on autopilot. Is that even accurate at all?
That's it. That's right. And I've got a lot of people that, you know, started out years ago with us about $300,000. I've got several people that have $2 million with us now.
Ooh, wow.
And they've grown it and grown it, and they've put more money in. And I was looking at some of their portfolios the other day, and they've got $2 million.
Good Lord.
So they've grown it a lot. They've put some more in, and we've really made it work. It's taken a lot of years. But I went back, and Rick, one of our customers, been with us since we started. He's made a lot of money. And he's the one that always said, I want 30 policies. No reason not to have 30.
That's his goal. Is that even realistic? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I mean, he can do it. I mean, he's got a lot. And I've got two or three, you know, that over time they now have $2 million. And they didn't start out with that much. And I know some of these people start out, them and their fathers or them and their mothers. We have a lot of family accounts. It's the mother, the sons, everybody.
Is that kind of status? Does that take like 20 years to achieve? How can people get there? I guess the most efficient, quickest way.
Well, the more policies you have, and to keep consistently investing, you know, it'll happen. It's just like everything else. It's going to take 7 or 8 years to double your money, but a lot of the people have had so many maturities, it's really speeded it up. Then I've got some that have not had that speed. I've got some that have gone over. I've got some people that theirs have gone over. So, you know, they're behind right now. Mm-hmm. But when those start maturing, it'll all come back and they'll catch up.
With the state of treatments and hospital capacity and what's allowed and what's not allowed, are we in a period of accelerated maturities, or am I going too far with that?
Well, that's what 21st Services say. They say we will have more maturities this year than usual because a lot of the people that have cancer, they're not letting them in the hospital because if they've got all those virus people in there, you can't go in there. They don't even let their family go in. You know that. The client of mine that died 2 weeks ago, his wife said we were not allowed to go to the hospital. The only way we could see him was do Zoom. Mm. And they had him on a Zoom on the iPad.
Wow.
They do not let you go to a hospital. If they've got the virus, you can't visit. They have to die alone, and that's a terrible thing.
That is a terrible thing, man.
Yeah, it is. So they're not letting a lot of the cancer people go in.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah. So it's kind of a bad situation right now.
It is a bad scene. So, all right, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
We should also mention your website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com, and people can go there and see real figures that people have been making. If they want to see some real-world numbers, they can read testimonials, find out a little bit more about the program before they come talk to you. So every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
Well, these archaeologists have discovered some spear points in South Texas, the oldest in the United States, oldest in North America.
Wow. Really?
Yes. these researchers have discovered what they believe these spear points were used by human hunters 15,000 years ago.
Really?
This makes it the oldest weapons ever found.
Do you think they hunted like dinosaurs, or is that, that's not, that's too far?
Yeah, woolly mammoths, they said.
Really? Oh, wow.
These predate the earliest known weapons made by the Clovis people, whom archaeologists have always believed that they were the first humans to settle the Americas. But they're not. This team of researchers from A&M, Baylor, University of Texas, they made this find. It's around 40 miles northwest of Austin, and it's called the Deborah Friedman site because it's on their ranch.
Ooh.
Yeah, and they've been working on this for 10 years on this ranch.
Really? And it's just now coming out?
Yes, it's just now coming to light. These researchers have recovered these spear points, and they're made of chert, C-H-E-R-T. It's a type of rock. As well as other tools buried in layers of sediment that they believe 15,000 years ago.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yes, and unlike the spear-shaped stone weapons known as the Clovis points, which have been found in Texas as well as Mexico, these are not made like that at all. Those were between 12,000 and 13,000 years ago. But these spear points are made out of cert, and it's a magnificent discovery. And all of the pre-Clovis sites had stone tools. But these spear points have been made out of cert, C-E-R-T. It's an amazing thing. The dream has always been to find these prehistoric things, but they did not know that they went back that far.
It may not say, but did they know that these existed and they were looking for them, or were they looking for something else and they stumbled on these?
I think they stumbled upon them. They were looking to see what kind of old artifacts and old spears, you know, the metal ones, were buried in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But they said they hunted mammoths and other large animals that roamed what is now Central Texas, and it was 15 years ago. And it says it's going to force scientists to rethink the early people that came here.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see that, because I'm sure this messes up what we currently know is for, like, the timeline of who was where and when. I'm sure this is going to disrupt that a little bit.
Yeah, and these, it's made of rock. And unlike the others, the spear-shaped stone weapons known as Clovis points, which have been found in Texas and Mexico, and they thought that was the oldest in the world.
And if they use these to conquer mammoths, they've got to be pretty big. I would assume.
Can you imagine if it's woolly mammoths?
You don't just get them with a box cutter. you got to have something significant.
Well, and they said their dream had always been to find diagnostic artifacts known as projectile points that can be recognized as part of the Clovis people. But it's a long way past that. These are 15,000 years ago. And they believe the earliest American used these spear points not only to hunt mammoths and large animals that roamed in Central Texas. And it says it's forcing scientists to rethink what they thought. The first humans to settle in America did around 13,000 years ago. They walked from Alaska.
You got to be kidding me.
No, through ice-free corridors in western Canada before heading southwest.
Wow. That's a lifetime's journey.
Yeah, and the discovery of the Monte Verde settlement, which was in southern Chile, and it dates back 14,000 years, poked holes in their theory.
Wow. You don't think about people being in America that far back. Europe, yes, but here, not so much.
I wouldn't even believe it, you know. Yeah. And it says it expands what they thought about the earliest people to explore and to settle in North America during the end of the last ice age is a complete process, and the complexity is seen in their genetic records. It said we're seeing a completely different story of who came to Texas and what year they were here. Instead of the 13,000 years ago, these people were here 15,000 years ago and made these spears made of rock. But they all came during this ice age. Can you believe all this?
It's amazing. And all this was like before Christopher Columbus stepped on Plymouth Rock in 16,
right.
Whatever it was.
And I've never seen pictures of these great woolly mammoths that roam Texas.
Yeah. I'm sure they're huge.
So the Clovis people were not the first ones here.
Interesting. I wonder.
And the ones I thought were those Indians at Big Bend. You know, it was a group of Indians years and years ago, and all that sediment and rock down there was from those Indians. That was years ago, and they weren't even the first.
So weird how all this works. You know, we think that we're the only ones or the first ones or, you know, generations of the first ones. There may have been complete civilizations of people many, many years before us. So it's difficult to think about that sometimes until you find things like this. So you see these, trophies, I guess, that they find and they discover. And then it's like, oh, my goodness, it's kind of sends what we think we know on its side a little bit, I would think.
Well, the archaeologist said this is going to completely change what we have in our history books.
Yeah.
Because it's wrong.
Yeah.
They are going to have to rethink the history of North America and Texas, who was the prehistoric people who were here, and what were they using? Well, they were using these spears made out of rock, and they discovered them on a ranch, of all places.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but they've been at it for 10 years out there.
I wonder what made them, you know, start, you know, saying, hey, there must be something here. Let's start digging.
I think the family found something and contacted the universities. That's usually the way it works. A family will contact the university and say, I think I have a find here on my ranch. And they came out there and they've been there ever since.
Wow. That's a long time to be digging for stuff.
And, you know, it takes them a long time and they do it a little tiny bit at a time. Which I would lose interest if I couldn't find it right away. I'm one of those people, if I can find it, I'll do it. And then I'm going to say, oh, no, it's going to take too long. I give up.
You are way too impatient to
be digging. Yeah, I am too impatient. Yeah, I mean, like if the cherry pie is there, why don't we eat it today? Let's don't wait till tomorrow.
So archaeologist is not in your future at all.
It's not. It's too slow. I mean, they're perfectly fine with finding just a tiny thing today and tomorrow. And look, it's been 10 years, and they finally discovered all this.
Wow. That's amazing.
And there was other artifacts. It doesn't tell what else was found, but this is the most prevalent and the most important find. Is these spears made out of this rock.
You know, and then you start
and
to wonder.
I don't know how big they were, but for woolly mammoths, I think it'd have to be pretty big.
I would think so. You'd need something significant, and then you wonder if maybe they were even bigger, and then maybe over time they've kind of, you know, maybe, and I know they're underground, but, you know, maybe there's been, you know, some kind of factors that have kind of, you know, maybe some of them have eroded a little bit, and they're maybe smaller than what they used to be, and this is all that's left.
I think they have eroded. I think the ground has changed a lot. I think sediment is in there, and it's been so many years, they've got to be in smaller pieces now.
Yeah. I wonder what else they'll find.
I don't know, but it's the oldest weapons in North America.
Wow. I can't believe people walked from Alaska. That's just crazy.
That's where they came from, and it was in the Ice Age.
Wow. They got to set out
15,000 years ago, and they were using them. And they were human hunters.
Mm.
And it predates anything we've known about the Clovis people and those people 12,000, 13,000 years ago that were here.
Where are these? Near Austin, you said?
Yes, they are, 40 miles from Austin.
Wow.
On these people's ranch. So you can imagine in 10 years, and they don't tell what else they've found, but they said they found many artifacts from that period that they've discovered, that history has got to be changed because they found another group of people. They know that these people were here before the Clovis people, who we thought were the very, very first.
So it's a whole other civilization they found evidence of.
A whole other civilization. And they came by way of Canada during the Ice Age.
I can't even. Hey, kids, pack your bags. We're going to go walking for the next 25 years. I can't even imagine that.
None of us can. And we don't know what they looked like. I'd love to know, what did these people look like?
Yeah, I wonder if they found any remains that they can, like, do some kind of reconstruction something.
I don't know. They haven't mentioned any bones. There may be bones there, but they haven't mentioned it. They just talked about the artifacts that changed their whole thinking for three universities. University of Texas, A&M's out there, University of Texas. All of them have worked, the archaeologists, 10 years, and now they have these wonderful finds, and I don't know which university they'll go to.
I wonder if the people who write the history books, the history book writing association, is going to be open to changing all this, or at least introducing some early facts, or if they're just going to try to shut it down and say, nope, history books are written and it is what it is. I wonder if they're open to it.
Well, it says history is going to have to be changed.
Wow.
Now that, you know, that's what they say on this, is this is going to, and it says these findings, they published them in the Journal of Science Advances.
So they're serious. It's credible.
It's already been published, and they say it's going to force scientists to rethink the accepted wisdom about human settlement in North America yet again.
This changes.
So apparently they've had to change it before. I mean, they've already changed this once, it sounds to me like. But no, they've already went to press, and they published it in a Journal of Science Advances.
So this is legit.
Yes.
Huh.
And discovery of the Monte Verde settlement in southern Chile. And that has been published a long time. And it pokes holes in that theory at Chile. At the time, the ice-free route through Canada didn't even exist.
Really?
And it's going to rewrite the long-accepted timeline and other potential support for the theory that the earliest Americans may have arrived, not by land, but by sea, entering at various points along the Pacific coast.
Wow. That literally changes everything. Like,
yes.
Everything.
So it's a complete process, genially, so it's all going to have to be reprinted, because they've already printed this in the science magazines about what they found.
I wonder, I'm sure none of these things are on display yet. We can't even see them, right? I'm sure.
I don't think so. I'm going to find out which university they go to, because I don't know which university that will be allowed to keep all this.
Yeah, it'd be really something to go see, like a display, but I'm sure they're probably still in the research phase, and they're not ready to, you know, put them out and say definitely, hey, here's what this is, here's what it was used for, here's when it was around, these are the people that created this. They're probably not even prepared to even go anywhere near that, but man, it would be nice to at least, you know, see some photographs or something. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating, and, it would be nice to go and see it, not just read about it, and see. I wonder if they have any idea what the people looked like. I'd love to know.
Yeah. I mean, I know that when they do, like, these reconstruction things based on bones that they find, and they're like, well, you know, this is probably, you know, their face structure, and this is probably what their bone structure looked like, and this is probably a rendering of what a typical person back then might have looked like. I wonder if they're going to be, you know, completely unique, or if it's going to resemble, you know, a civilization like we've seen. Like the King Tut types of things, where they recreate people. I wonder if it's going to be anything like that or completely different.
I don't know. You know, I went to see the King Tut when it came to Dallas. Did you see it?
No, you actually, you saw that?
Yeah, it was a traveling roadshow, so to speak, and the museum in Dallas sponsored it, and it came to Fair Park in Dallas.
Really?
Yes.
What did you get to see? Was it actually King Tut, or was it like artifacts?
Well, it was supposed to be him. We don't know. It was a mummified deal in this tomb deal, you know, standing up. They had everything from him, all these gold scepters, gold cups. I can't even remember what all, but it was a huge show. And we lined up for hours to go through that thing.
Man, I would have loved to have seen that. I bet that was fascinating.
Yeah. Yes, and it went on and on. It was a long wait. And then he crept through this building, through all of the artifacts they had there. It was amazing.
The wait was worth it, I'm sure.
It was. It was worth every moment. I think it took 2 hours or 2.5 hours to go through the exhibit.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, that's huge. Yeah. That's extensive.
And it, when it came to America, it was in several cities.
Man.
But when it came to Dallas, I took the family. We went through the whole thing.
How cool. And so now they've got these new weapons. Do you think they were like attached to a stick or some kind of a handle thing, or maybe like a slingshot device? Or
I think it had to be either to a slingshot or some kind of a wooden piece or something.
Yeah. Of course, if it was like attached to a wooden thing, I'm sure that's long been disintegrated, and so you know it's kind of a little bit out of context, I would imagine. But, wow, fascinating.
It is, and I'm waiting to find more about it to see if we can see the exhibits, when we could see them, and where they are. I don't know, but I'm going to try to find out.
I like to Google this. What's it called again?
It's a little spear.
I put you on the spot.
That is part of a rock.
All right.
Yes. C-E-R-T.
CERT. C-E-R-T. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. I'm gonna Google that after a while.
Yes, it's spear points. It's a type of rock. You can just see it. And you can look up in the history of Texas, and you can find this. And this little spear points, 15,000 years ago, and it should be right there. As I said, it's part of a rock.
Wow. This is a big deal.
C-H-E-R-T, a type of rock, okay?
Okay. Well, I mean, this like literally changes everything. This is huge. Very cool, very cool. This is your money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
So for investing in a life insurance policy, do you find that that people like to get into this with other people? And I'm probably saying this really stupid-like, but do you find people like to come in with other people to kind of maybe reduce the risk or not put all their eggs in one basket and then maybe go separate or like a family deal or husband and wife?
Well, it's like this. When I invite them into a policy, it's probably $300,000 up to $1 million or even bigger. So they're only a small part of that policy. Now, every once in a while, I'll have $100,000 or $200,000, and somebody wants it by themselves. They don't want anybody but themselves. And so we'll let them buy that. But most people invest with other people. Usually there's 8 to 10 people in every policy.
Okay. All right. And when you say like these policy terms, like 18 to 24 months, we're talking about when the doctors, I'm trying to make sure I say this right, when the doctors and the experts think the policy will mature and when it will pay out.
That's exactly right. Remember, these reports that we get are from the doctors and then the people that make up the report. There's 4 or 5 big companies that do this. And then they use their judgment with it to give us the report. They write it out, and then we read it and make a determination if we want to buy that policy.
So life settlement, I guess one of the big benefits is that they have quicker turnarounds, 18, 24, 30 months, whatever the case may be, or even less. And so I would imagine probably that's one of the biggest things, as opposed to longer term investment opportunities that other people might be used to. Is that one of the big things that people like?
I think because, you know, you can do it several times, you know, every year, every 2 years, or every 6 months. And it works very good doing it this way.
So each investment term is relatively short. The investment strategy is more long-term.
That's right.
Okay.
And, you know, another thing, and I wanted to mention about annuities, because some people came and did an annuity this week. And most people don't realize when you buy an annuity, you're investing either in the S&P, the NASDAQ, a bond fund, all these things that keep you out of the stock market direct. In other words, when you're in an annuity, your money is safe and tucked away in the annuity. And if you're in the S&P and it makes money, it locks in right then. And it can't ever go down. It's not like if you're direct in the stock market, your savings can go right down the tube. You can lose money. But when you're in an annuity and it makes money, it locks in every year. So your earnings, every time you make them, at the end of the year, it's locked in, and they put that interest in your column. So that's something everybody should consider that needs an annuity. We don't ever hardly talk about annuities, but I was just thinking about it this week, because we did some annuities this week for some people, and that's why they did it. They couldn't qualify to go in the life settlements, okay? But they had enough money to do an annuity, and what that annuity will do over the years is that you can invest in the S&P, you can invest in the NASDAQ, the Dow, and when you invest in it, you're not ever going to lose. Because at the end of the year, if it made money, they just lock it in and put it in your account. That's pretty neat.
It's a good point. We don't really focus a lot on annuities, because this is all about, you know, planning for retirement and even after retirement. And life settlements are not the only option. You do have to be accredited to do the life settlement program. So what is that? How does somebody get accredited? What does that mean?
Okay, if you're accredited, you make $200,000 a year, or you have to be worth $1 million without your home.
And so some people, even if they are accredited, would rather go with the annuity route. Do people do that?
Lots of times they do. Or sometimes they say, I want an annuity, and I'll do the life settlement also. But usually it's two different types of people. Annuity people are different usually than people that do life settlements. Annuity people, they like just knowing it's safe in annuity, that they could still invest like they were in the stock market, that they don't have the risk. So in 5 years or 6 years, they may want to start taking money out every year so they can retire and use this as a retirement rollover is what they can use it as. So there's two ways to think about it.
Do people ever do both a life settlement and annuity?
Yes.
Or is it one or the other?
Yes. I have a lot of people that have annuities and life settlements.
Jeez, we've never talked about that before. I didn't know. I don't know why it never crossed my mind. But.
Yeah, they can and they do, and annuities have done real well over the years. They've averaged I was looking this morning on this one company. They've averaged 10% the last 10 years. That's an average.
Huh. Well, that's not bad.
So for annuity, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
Yeah.
So what's the outlook look like? You know, as far as you know, getting into either one, annuities or a life settlement. Is there availability? Is there policies?
Yes, we will
options?
Be talking to people this week if they want to get their retirement nailed down. Now's a good time to do it. Get switched over to a life settlement where you know what you're going to make, where you know how much your money is safe. You know, it's in a life policy. I figure that's pretty safe if you're in a life insurance policy. Everybody has a life policy. So that I would recommend. If they're accredited, this would be a good time to switch over, put some money in, see if you like us. If you do, you can put more. Or some of these big companies are not going to do matching 401ks anymore. I just read about it. Exxon said they're not going to match the 401k anymore.
Really?
So if they're not, they may want to take the money out and bring it over to us and let us work with them.
You know, I would imagine probably when people start thinking about, you know, oh, man, I got to start, you know, getting ready for retirement, they probably think it's a tedious process. But I tell you what, making money is fun.
That's right. Everybody likes to make money. I don't care who you are.
All right. So availability this week, you've got Zoom meetings. You've got some appointments open for people if they want to call.
Yes.
All right.
And we will talk to them. We'll do it over the phone. We'll do a Zoom meeting. Then come to office. I will get over the phone with them, and we'll talk them through it.
All right. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number for people to get started?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.